Ever wonder if your favorite rock anthems actually hide layers of pretty profound poetry? What if the lyrics you're humming along to are like as intricate and deeply felt as anything by Shakespeare or T.S. Eliot?
It sounds a bit out there, maybe.
Right. But today, we're going to crack open that audacious idea with Bob Dylan front and center.
Okay.
For this discussion, we're doing a deep dive into Christopher Rix's, well, seminal work, Dylan's Visions of Sin.
A classic of criticism, really.
Totally. And let me be clear right up front. This isn't a biography of Dylan. Not at all.
Yeah.
It's a rigorous, sometimes dazzling analysis of his lyrics,
Yeah, the words themselves.
proving their enduring literary merit.
Indeed. We've really immersed ourselves in Rix's critical masterpiece here. Our mission, if you like, is to unpack his central argument that Dylan songs are, in fact, high art.
High art,
Yeah,
okay.
demanding the same kind of close reading you'd give to, say, Keats or Milton, and revealing this complex, often unsettling moral universe within the songs. We'll explore exactly how Rix uses these ancient moral frameworks to unlock the profound depth of Dylan's songwriting. He's really justifying Dylan's artistic greatness beyond just, his huge cultural impact.
And this isn't just for the Dylan fanatics out there, though they'll love it too, I
Oh,
suspect.
definitely.
It's really for anyone curious about how we judge art, how popular culture maybe connects to these timeless traditions, and frankly, how paying closer attention to language, just the words, can absolutely transform how you understand the world around you.
Yeah, it really can.
Get ready for some serious aha moments, because honestly, Rix's insights are genuinely transformative.
They really are. And for anyone who's, dipped their toe into modern literary criticism, Sir Christopher Rix is a name that just immediately commands respect.
Right, he's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. One of the most distinguished critics of his generation, known for these meticulous, almost surgical analyses of literary giants like John Milton, Tennyson, T.S. Eliot.
Heavy hitters.
Absolutely. He's a titan in the field, and that background, that pedigree, is really key here.
And that's precisely why he's kind of uniquely positioned to analyze Dylan, isn't it?
Yeah.
He comes from this world of high art, literary criticism, bringing that exact same rigorous, close reading methodology to, well, popular music, rock and roll lyrics.
Which was pretty groundbreaking at the time. It really challenged that perceived gap, that wall between high and popular art.
I bet. I can just imagine some traditionalists maybe scoffing at the idea back then.
Oh, for sure.
So how did Rix, coming from that very academic world, manage to make his argument so, well, so persuasive, so hard to ignore?
I think he disarms them with just sheer textual meticulousness. Rix, at his core, is a master of close reading.
Okay, let's unpack that term a bit. What does close reading actually mean in practice?
It means focusing incredibly intensely on every single word, looking at its sounds, its multiple meanings, its etymology, where it came from, its historical context, and how it connects with all the other words in the song, in the text. It's like using a literary microscope.
Okay.
And this method, this focus, allows him to uncover the full depth of Dylan's artistry. He shows how every choice Dylan makes, a single word, a specific rhyme, even a hesitation, contributes to a larger, profound moral meaning.
So he's not just saying Dylan's a great poet.
No, not at all. He shows it, line by line, syllable by syllable. It's incredibly detailed.
Okay, so let's get to the core argument then. Dylan, as a major poet whose work is a sustained moral inquiry into the human condition, that's a bold claim,
It is.
especially when, his work was often dismissed as just folk music or rock.
Yeah.
How does Rix actually prove that Dylan deserves this kind of, well, elevated literary status?
Well, what Rix is doing here is profoundly significant. He's justifying Dylan's artistic greatness, not just based on his undeniable cultural impact. Everyone knows he's influential,
Right.
but through the really rigorous lens of literary value. He argues against just dismissing Dylan's work as, simple folk protest or rock ephemera. He insists and shows with meticulous evidence that these lyrics don't just survive demanding literary scrutiny, they actually thrive under it.
Okay, thrive. I like that.
Yeah, it's like taking a pop song and revealing it's actually got the complexity of, I don't know, an intricate classical symphony hidden inside. He sees Dylan as a really serious moral artist. His genius lies in his masterful command of language to explore the deepest parts of the human heart and soul. He's engaging with the great moral and spiritual questions that have always preoccupied humanity.
What really blew me away, though, and what truly elevates Rick's analysis for me is how he chooses to structure this moral universe. He doesn't invent some new system, does he? He reaches way back.
Exactly. And this is where it gets really fascinating. Rick structures his whole analysis around this ancient and, well, incredibly enduring theological framework, the seven deadly sins.
Right. Pride, envy, sloth.
Mm-hmm. Then the four cardinal virtues, justice, prudence, temperance, fortitude. And finally, the three heavenly graces, faith, hope, and charity.
Wow. So he's mapping Dylan onto that.
Precisely. It gives him this coherent thematic lens to view Dylan's often really mercurial career. It lets him map Dylan's huge output onto a kind of universal moral landscape that goes beyond any single genre or period of his work.
That makes sense.
And it's crucial, like you said earlier, to remember this book is an anatomy of his art. It's not a chronological biography.
Not Bob Dylan did this, then he did that.
No. It guides you through hundreds of lyrics from all across Dylan's career, showing how maybe one word choice or a surprising rhyme, or even just the way he sings something, the vocal tone, can unlock profound moral and emotional meaning. And Ricks constantly connects Dylan's work to literary precursors, the Bible, Shakespeare, Eliot, proving his place in that grand tradition.
Okay, let's journey through this framework then, starting with part one, sins. Ricks really paints Dylan as a master anatomist of human failing. That's quite a phrase.
It is, isn't it?
And where better to start than the sin of sins, pride.
Right. And for pride, Ricks offers this absolutely exhaustive, close reading of like a Rolling Stone.
Can't avoid that one.
Nope. Think about those relentless, almost suffocating rhymes, alone, stone, unknown, home. Ricks argues they don't just echo each other. They actively trap the subject of the song.
How do you mean trap?
Well, each rhyme becomes like another nail in the coffin of her isolation. It's a linguistic mirror reflecting a soul being stripped bare of all its illusions. You can almost feel the world closing in on Miss Lonely, can't you?
Yeah, you really can.
Yeah.
And it's not just the rhymes, is it? The way Dylan actually sings those lines, that sneering, almost accusatory tone. Rick says that's crucial, too.
Oh, absolutely central. It adds another layer of judgment, of moral weight to the song. It's this profound and, frankly, terrifying exploration of illusions being shattered, and the pride that had shielded Miss Lumley is now just utterly exposed.
That vocal delivery is part of the poem itself for Rick.
Exactly. The sound communicates the moral attitude just as much as the words on the page.
Okay, so from the crushing weight of pride, let's turn to maybe the corrosive acid of envy. Ricks finds that in positively Fourth Street.
Yes, he dissects the song's rhetoric of resentment. He focuses on Dylan's incredibly venomous use of the word you.
Mm-hmm. It's relentless.
It is. It's not just an accusation. It feels like a direct, almost surgical strike at someone presumed to be a friend. The repetition isn't just for emphasis. It builds this intense, intimate, yet incredibly cutting confrontation.
That line, you say you lost your faith, but that's not where it's at. You had no faith to lose, and you know it. Oof! That really captures the bitterness. What's Rick's saying Dylan's doing there with that kind of precision?
Well, he's pulling absolutely no punches. Ricks would point to how Dylan uses that you, not just as a pronoun, but almost like a weapon.
Yeah.
And in that specific line, you had no faith to lose, there's this linguistic double-edged sword, right? It's obviously an accusation of hypocrisy.
Sure.
But it also subtly reveals the envy of the speaker. There's this slight insinuation of moral superiority from the singer, which, ironically, is its own form of pride, isn't it?
Interesting. So the sins intertwine.
Exactly. It's a masterful intertwining of sins through really subtle wordplay, showing how one vice can easily feed another.
That raw envy, it feels almost like a kind of bitter paralysis, which makes me wonder about other forms of maybe spiritual stagnation Dylan explores. What about sloth? Or Ricks uses that older term, exedy.
That's a perfect segue, because from the active venom of envy, Ricks guides us to this more insidious form of spiritual malaise.
Exidy, which isn't just laziness, right?
Not at all. It's far deeper than just being physically lazy. Exidy is a kind of spiritual exhaustion, a profound weariness of the soul, a fundamental inability to find joy or meaning, even in connection to God or art or other people.
Like a deep apathy.
Exactly. That deep, paralyzing apathy that makes you feel hollow, makes you want to turn away from the world, from art, from life itself.
Okay.
So when the narrator in Mr. Tambourine Man sings, my senses have been stripped. My hands can't feel to grip. My toes too numb to step. Wait only for my boot heels to be wandering. Ricks isn't just hearing tiredness there. He's hearing the spiritual paralysis of axity. He hears a soul crying out for reawakening. desperate for art, for the Tambourine Man's song to bring it back to life.
Wow. So Dylan, this master anatomist of human failing, paints a really vivid picture of our vices. But Rix isn't just, like, cataloging our flaws, is he? Where's the counterbalance in Dylan's moral universe?
Precisely. That's crucial. From the darkness of human failing, Rix skillfully pivots to part two, virtues. This is where Dylan examines the ideals we need for a truly moral life.
Okay.
He shows us that Dylan isn't just pointing out what's wrong, he's also hinting at what's right, what we should aspire to. And one of the clearest examples Rix explores is justice.
And for justice, the lonesome death of Hattie Carroll seems like a cornerstone.
Absolutely. Rix provides this masterful analysis showing how Dylan uses almost journalistic detail and this stark controlled narrative to build an irrefutable case against a monstrous injustice.
It feels very precise, almost clinical in its dissection of that social failure.
It really is. And Rix emphasizes the unique effect of the final lines of each verse.
Yeah.
You know, like, but you who philosophize disgrace and criticize all fears, take the rag away from your face. Yeah. Now ain't the time for your tears.
Right. He keeps holding back the emotion.
Exactly. Dylan isn't letting the listener off the hook with easy sentiment. He's deliberately deferring that emotional release, forcing this cold, hard moral judgment until the song's absolutely devastating conclusion.
Mm.
This technique compels you, the listener, to engage intellectually and morally, not just emotionally. It's not just about feeling sad. It's about acknowledging a systemic injustice and feeling implicated by it yourself.
It's like an intellectual approach to protest music, forcing us to confront the facts before we're allowed the maybe luxury of feeling.
Okay, so from these cardinal virtues, Rix then moves to part three, graces, the theological virtues, often in Dylan's more spiritual stuff.
Correct. Faith, hope, and charity. And for faith, the quintessential song from Dylan's gospel era is Every Grain of Sand.
Beautiful song. Incredible. Rix compares its language and its spiritual depth to the poetry of William Blake, even the Psalms. He highlights its intricate rhymes and this profound humility.
Mm-hmm.
But what's crucial here for Rix is how Dylan integrates doubt into his faith. It's not presented as this blind, unwavering belief, but rather one that's been forged through struggle and uncertainty. Rix sees it as a perfect fusion of doubt and faith, which he considers a major artistic achievement for Dylan. It speaks to the complex, often messy reality of anyone's spiritual life.
Yeah.
And the language itself, it's almost biblical in its resonance, which elevates the personal struggle to something universal.
And charity. That selfless, unconditional love. Rix finds this embodied in I Shall Be Released. What makes that song in particular so powerful for expressing this grace?
Well, for Rix, that song really transcends individual longing. It becomes this universal plea for freedom, both literal freedom, maybe from prison, but also spiritual freedom. And it's sung from a collective we. I see my light come shining from the west unto the east. Any day now, I shall be released. It's a vision of human solidarity, right?
Yeah.
A shared longing for redemption and peace. It's a profound act of empathy and hope, not just for one person, but for everyone. It's less about one individual's suffering and more about this universal yearning for grace, for collective absolution.
Mm-hmm.
And the simplicity of the language there, combined with the sheer depth of the sentiment, that's what Rix really admires.
This whole exploration, it really does paint Dylan as a canonical poet, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That seems to be the overarching message.
Absolutely.
Rix is putting him right in dialogue with the literary giants, showing how he's vitalizing this rich heritage.
Yeah, he's arguing Dylan belongs in the pantheon of English language poetry. And that idea of the moral universe, the sins, virtues, graces, as a framework, that really ties it all together. It's not just some academic exercise Rix is doing. He argues it's the most coherent and illuminating way to see Dylan as a fundamentally moral artist. Someone preoccupied with questions of right and wrong, temptation and redemption, the eternal struggle within the human heart.
What's fascinating here, and you touched on this earlier, is Rix's insight that rhyme in Dylan's hands is never just decorative. It's a rhyme of reason. How does that work? How does it deepen the moral complexity?
Well, Rix argues that Dylan's puns, his alliterations, the way he twists cliches and familiar phrases, all of that creates layers of moral complexity. It proves that the sound of the words is inseparable from their sense.
Okay.
A successful rhyme, for Rix, doesn't just sound good. It confirms a connection between ideas. It creates this sense of inevitability almost, or truth, forcing the listener to confront the implications of those linked concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how he plays with familiar phrases, turns them inside out, making them suddenly reveal a darker or deeper truth you hadn't noticed before.
And we absolutely can't forget Dylan's voice itself. Ricks argues the grain of the voice, you know, the sneer, the plea, the fury, the weary humility that's central to the song's moral and emotional meaning.
Totally. You have to hear it.
Yeah. Reading Dylan on the page is only half the experience, maybe less. The moral attitude is embodied in the sound.
Which brings up an important question. Why does Dylan often seem so ambiguous? His lyrics are famously open to multiple interpretations.
Right. People argue about them endlessly.
Exactly. And Ricks champions this. He sees it as a deliberate artistic strategy. In a world that is morally complex, clear-cut answers are often false or too simple.
Mm.
Dylan's enigmatic lyrics capture the genuine uncertainty and contradictions of human experience. And crucially, they force you, the listener, to participate in the act of creating meaning.
So you have to wrestle with it.
Yes. You have to wrestle with the moral questions he poses, rather than just being handed easy answers. It makes the art a dialogue, not a lecture.
Okay, so bringing this all together, what are the real-life applications? How does this change how you listen or even how you live?
Well, the most direct application is learning to listen to any music with greater depth.
Right, not just Dylan.
No, anything.
Yeah.
Ricks' method encourages this active analysis of lyrics, word choices, rhymes, vocal delivery. It teaches us that popular art can be immensely complex and rewarding, moving us beyond just passive consumption.
It's like being given a secret decoder ring for all music in a way.
Kind of, yeah. And if you connect this to the bigger picture, you can apply this Sin Virtue framework, or just Ricks' method of deep reading, to other things, films, books, maybe even the daily news.
Mm-hmm.
It encourages reflection on how these timeless concepts, pride, justice, envy, faith, manifest in our own lives, how they shape our understanding of human behavior and what's happening in society. It becomes a lens to view the world with more clarity.
Ricks's work also, I think, gives you permission to find profound art in unexpected places.
Yes.
Like a rock album or a graphic novel or a film. It powerfully argues against those artificial distinctions between high and low culture.
Definitely.
It fosters a more democratic, open-minded approach to cultural appreciation. It sort of liberates us from the idea that important art has to come in a certain predefined package.
And fundamentally, this whole deep dive is really a masterclass in the power of words.
Yeah.
It can inspire you to be more mindful of language in your own communication,
mm-hmm.
appreciating nuance, well-turned phrases, understanding how language shapes truth or perception of truth.
Mm.
It sharpens your sensitivity to rhetoric, whether you encounter it in politics or advertising or just personal relationships. It makes you a more discerning consumer of information, maybe, and a more precise communicator yourself.
So let's distill this down. What are the final takeaways? Maybe an emotional one first.
For me, the most emotionally powerful lesson from Ricks's analysis is just the sheer emotional resonance Dylan achieves by wrestling so honestly with these universal human struggles, pride, justice, faith, doubt, love, loss. It reminds us that great art can illuminate our deepest shared experiences and aspirations, making us feel seen and understood in our own complex human condition.
Okay. And an intellectual insight.
Intellectually, the most important takeaway is that Bob Dylan's artistic legacy is profoundly secured, not just by his fame or cultural impact, which are undeniable,
right,
but by his masterful command of the English language and his lifelong courageous exploration of human morality. Ricks places him firmly, and I think deservedly, in the literary canon alongside history's greatest poets.
And finally, a universal insight, something practical we can all take away.
I think the most practical, universally applicable life lesson here is that true artistic value really transcends those superficial categories like high or low culture.
Hmm.
By developing a deeper, more analytical way of listening and engaging with all forms of art, you can unlock richer meanings and connections in your daily life. It makes every encounter with creativity potentially more enriching. It's about finding the profound in the everyday, maybe.
I like that, finding the profound in the everyday.
So maybe the next time you hear a Bob Dylan song, or really any piece of popular music, ask yourself, what layers of meaning might I be missing here?
Mm-hmm.
What moral questions are being explored right there, maybe hidden in plain sight, just waiting for a deeper listen?
Yeah. This deep dive into Christopher Ricks's brilliant work, it truly transforms how you listen to Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
It elevates his songs from just cultural artifacts to these timeless works of art that grapple with the very essence of what it means to be human.
Absolutely.
We really hope this has given you a fresh perspective and perhaps, a new way to appreciate the poetry that might be all around us, even in unexpected places.